As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Buffalo Beat. The Buffalo Bills have done a couple of different things since we last spoke. Well, actually, one thing, and the other one that people are still trying to get a hold of, the fact that they won their first game, their first Monday Night Football game since the turn of the century. And then the big news, which came down this week, is that Bills GM Brandon Bean was given a contract extension that will run the same amount of time as the extension given to head coach Sean McDermott. And the Bills have their top two guys, the head coach and the GM, working in unison for now and for the future. So surely a very historic day for the Bills, because they have not had all that much success at either of those positions, and now they have them locked up for the long term. My name is Joe Biscaglia. With me is my podcast co-host, Matthew Fairburn, and we will get to the Bills-Steelers matchup, which is a big one, so we can't really ignore it as much as some of the other, maybe not as meaty matchups, but we have to start with the Bean extension because it's the big topic, and it means that the Bills will have some security with how they are shaping their roster moving forward and who is in charge of all of that, which is just as important as anything in today's NFL. So when Bean was extended, what were your initial thoughts, Matthew?
I think probably like a lot of people, I thought, it's about time because, we talked when Sean McDermott got his extension, and I wrote at the time that, I wouldn't say I was overly critical of it, but I raised the question of why it had to be then. Why, with 2 years left when you hadn't seen what 2020 would look like, why then? But at the time, the thought was, there was a lot of talk about stability and all these things. And for it to go a few months without Brandon Bean, being matched up in that stability felt a little bit off. So him getting this deal, lining up with Sean McDermott, makes all the sense in the world, especially with the full context now that we have in 2020, Josh Allen taking a big step forward, this team being 9-3 again, looking like they have a chance to not only win their first division title since 1995, but have a real crack at making a Super Bowl run in the playoffs. When you factor in all those things, Brandon Bean, absolutely deserved this extension. I think he deserves, he's going to get a lot of votes, I think, for NFL Executive of the Year. When you look at the body of work and the reason the Bills are good in 2020 or as good as they are, a lot of it has to do with Josh Allen and a lot of it has to do with Stephon Diggs. And I think Brandon Bean deserves a lot of credit for both of those moves. Does he deserve all of the credit? Probably not. There's a lot of group effort that went into it. But not only drafting Josh Allen, but then surrounding him with talent, recognizing where he failed him, whether it was not giving him a strong enough backup quarterback, not giving him a good enough offensive line, not giving him good enough receivers, acknowledging those faults, publicly admitting those failures, and working to correct them. He hasn't, you know, people will bring up his draft record, which hasn't been perfect. You know, his free agent signings haven't been spotless, but where they count, they've been good. He's built arguably the best group of receivers in the NFL. He's built an above average offensive line without, you know, a crazy amount of resources. And he drafted a quarterback who looks like the real deal. So all of that to say, you know, he's timed a lot of things really well. He's managed things really well. I think he's a really good balance for Sean McDermott. You know, they're not these guys that are, you know, holding hands, skipping through the building, agreeing on every decision they make. That's just not who they are. And I think that's important. I think Sean McDermott needs that. And I think the big picture vision that Bean has is really solid. And it makes a lot of sense that he gets this deal now. Probably should have gotten it even a little bit sooner.
Yeah. My first impulse is all the same. I think this was something that needed to happen, that he has been by far their best general manager of the century, which really isn't saying much when you look at who they've had in that position. But I think also with how he has put to life his vision for what he wants the Bills and this roster to be moving forward. And he based a lot of it around finding that quarterback, and rightfully so, because you're not really going to get to where you want to go to unless you have that quarterback in place. And also, along with getting that quarterback, he has basically constructed this entire offense based around what Josh Allen does the best and how to maximize all of those skills and all of that potential that they could have. So I've been very impressed how he has been a bit of a, you know, he hasn't been so stubborn about his philosophical ideas of positions to where he's afraid to come off what he used to hold near and dear. I think one of those spots is you touched on it, is the wide receiver position, how he has built that up to perhaps the deepest and best receiver group in the entire league. It's actually interesting. Like, I was looking at my all 22 grades that I do every single week, and for the season, the four of the Bills' top 10 are receivers, which is unbelievable to think about based on where they were in 2018. But you think about what he used to value, like Kelvin Benjamin immediately springs to mind, and that was a mistake, and I'm sure he will admit that was a mistake, a rash decision, a rash usage of draft pick funds, but he has removed himself from that big target sort of thinking to where it's all about separation, it's all about taking advantage of the intermediate areas of the field, and really helping this quarterback who has at times struggled with throwing windows open before this year, and given him just receiver after receiver that just blows that out of the water to where he has so much separation that even if Allen spots it a tick too late, that he's still going to be able to complete a pass. So that has all been good. And then the balance of what he has done with building this team for now and the vision of building it for later. And I know it's something that he talked about when he first got the job, and it kind of turned into a bit of a cliche for them, a kind of a go-to sentence, but it's absolutely true, and they've enacted it because now they have this window that they are exploiting and potentially being contenders as early as this season, but still having this base of young players to which they are building around, that being Josh Allen, Tre'Davious White, Deion Dawkins, maybe Matt Milano, Tremaine Edmonds, who has really turned it on over the last four games. So you have all of these young players, and Stephon Diggs, you can lump him right in there along with that. You have all of these young players at high profile positions for what they are trying to build and establish in Buffalo. And you have one guy who acquired most of those talented players, that being Brandon Bean. So of course he needed the extension. Of course he needed to see this vision out and be able to be the guy that leads them to the next portion of the build. But the next portion is probably harder. Well, finding the quarterback is the hardest part, but the next part is harder than just about anything else other than finding a quarterback. And that is keeping that window open and alive for as long as possible and not acting and giving out extensions and big dollars to players and positions that you normally wouldn't based on your philosophy, but you're only doing so because of, you know, emotion and what they mean to your room. So this is going to be a challenging time, but it is rightfully deserved for Brandon Bean to be extended and being the GM moving forward.
Yeah, he needs now to look at things and have the ability. You know, he needs to hit on a lot of draft picks to manage the cap. That's a, you know, a necessity in the NFL. You're not going to be perfect as a drafter, which is an important you know, aspect of, you know, evaluating a general manager. Nobody's nailing every pick, but you do need to hit some to deal with, you know, offsetting losing some players and deal with balancing the salary cap, all of that. You just look at what happens across the league, you know, to some of these teams that hit some dry spells in the draft and have to pay a quarterback. It's harder to manage your cap, frankly, if you don't have that cheap talent coming through the pipeline. So, you know, that's a big deal. And I think, you know, like you said, kind of balancing the short term and the long term. What I've always appreciated about Brandon Bean is he doesn't really shy away from, you know, what the ultimate goal is. And he doesn't really beat around the bush about it. I know he wanted patience at the beginning, but he's gotten to the point now where 9-3 is not good enough. You know, they want to win the division and host playoff games, but he wants to take it to the next level after that. He wants to, you know, go beyond just being, you know, in the conversation, which I think is an important, you know, big picture mindset to have, not just being comfortable with. It'd be easy to do that around here because people are ready to build a statue for these guys because they've, you know, if they win the division, you know, things were so bad before them that it would be easy to just rest on your laurels and say, hey, we're better than the guys before us. But that was never the bar for him. You know, he, from the day he got here, wanted to win the Super Bowl, which a lot of people talk about, but it seems like there's a lot of people in the NFL more concerned with keeping their job and finding a way to stay employed and finding a way to have power and get credit and all these things than, you know, actually winning, and or they shy away from the expectations. And Brandon Bean's never been that. So he admits when he's wrong, he admits when he's screwed up, and does everything he can to make adjustments and try to get better. I was talking to Robert Mays this week, actually before Brandon Bean got extended, and you know, we were talking about the wide receivers that Brandon Bean has assembled in that group that he's put together. And I think, you know, one thing that Robert pointed out was, you know, nobody is perfect in the draft, and recognizing that the way Brandon Bean has is an asset that not, or a quality that not a lot of general managers have, to be able to say, all right, my draft's not going to be perfect. Let me load up with some other players at a certain position. You see it on the defensive line. Wasn't afraid to spend money and add competition to a group that he's invested draft picks in. Three of them, three pretty good ones. A first rounder, a second rounder, and a third rounder, and Ed Oliver, AJ Epenesa, and Harrison Phillips. You could say the same about wide receiver. You know, he's spent draft picks, but he's also been smart about signing veterans and trading for players. And the Stephon Diggs trade was perfectly timed with how the rest of this roster was being built. So the self-awareness is an important quality that is often in short supply in that position.
That's a fantastic way to put it, because there are so many times where, you know, just thinking back to what the Bills had at GM before Brandon Bean, and not even Doug Whaley, but, you know, you go back to Buddy Nix and Russ Brandon, Marv Levy. Like, they had all of these grand ideas, but they didn't really have a plan. They were just kind of going year to year and thinking they had a plan for that year, but they never really had a long-term vision in mind, which is what I appreciate and about the job that Bean has done so far, because he is taking such a macro approach to it while making micromanaging decisions with his individual roster from year to year, and having the self-awareness to maybe restrict yourself in some spots and timing up big moves to when your roster is in the right spot to do them. Like the Diggs one, perfect example. You know, how many times with past GMs did we see a team that wasn't ready to win go out and take a big swing on something, whether it be Sammy Watkins trading up to draft him and giving up an additional first round pick to do so, when clearly your quarterback was not the guy at that point in time, and he really didn't show any signs of being the guy. And the fact that they moved on from him quickly after that was all you needed to know about why that was not the wisest of moves by that GM. Before that, how about signing Mario Williams to a mega deal and really paying him just completely above and beyond anything else on their roster? And, you know, that's not to say that it was that didn't work out well, because he was still a good player for them, but it was just mistimed, because that team was not ready to win. Like, that team was maybe a playoff team, but they didn't have Super Bowl aspirations at that point. And it would be kind of silly to think that they did with the roster that they had. So I just think back to those times and how this Diggs move was so much different, because it was done with a goal in mind to maximize the potential of that quarterback that they believed was their franchise guy moving forward, and that they had seen tremendous growth from really game to game. And then Diggs just helped him really just take off this season. And it's not all Diggs. A lot of it is Allen and the coaching around him, certainly. But Diggs was a huge help, because he has been an absolute game breaker for them. He's been one of the best receivers in the NFL. He has the talent of one of the best receivers in the NFL. And quite honestly, I know the Vikings got Justin Jefferson out of the deal, and he looks really stinking good too, and he's on a low contract. But Jefferson is not one of the best receivers in the NFL right now, and Diggs is. And to exploit this window, this win now window, with that type of talent for a first round pick and signed to for a lot of years into the future in his prime, you know, I think that's a trade that they do 10 times out of 10.
You know, I think that trade and so much of what we're talking about shows how fine the line is between, you know, your reputation as a general manager, because trading for Stephon Diggs was definitely a good move. Like I said, one of the reasons this team is where it is. Would they be there with Justin Jefferson instead? Who knows? I don't think Justin Jefferson is quite the player Stephon Diggs is quite yet, but he looks like one of the best receivers in the NFL, I think, early on. He's been really, really good. But more to the point of, that could have gone really poorly. You know, like, if Josh Allen doesn't take a step forward and Stephon Diggs gets frustrated, this whole thing's broken and they look like fools. So the line and the timing and the boldness, I think, is important to recognize. It's not to say that they're lucky that it worked out. It's to say that it took some guts to do it, with a player that had, you know, deserved or not, this reputation of not necessarily being the best fit in Minnesota, and you're banking on him being the best fit with your quarterback who's kind of entering the prime of his career. And I think that all comes back to why I think Brandon Bean is an important presence in the organization, is because I do think that he thinks differently than Sean McDermott does about a lot of things. I think they're different people. I think they have some different ideas. I think they disagree more than people think, but he's also not afraid to voice those. And he's the type of person that you can have a disagreement with, and he's not going to stab you in the back, or, you know, he is just an honest and upfront person about a lot of stuff. He's competitive. He's not going to back down, but he's also, you know, they both have the same vision broadly. They both have the same goal. They both are tied to one another in their success. You know, one can't have success without the other. You know, nobody's getting more credit than the other person necessarily. So there's all that, you know, that the contracts, you know, continue to represent. But, you know, are they as, you know, Sean McDermott's grown a lot as a coach who is willing to, you know, be really aggressive on offense, whether it's passing the ball a lot, going for it on fourth down, like we saw on Monday night against the 49ers. You know, this is an impossible question to answer, but does he get there without a guy like Brandon Bean in his ear? You know, does he get there if he doesn't have an offense like the one that Brandon Bean built? We've heard Brian Daboll talk about the fact that they probably aren't a pass happy team or a team that runs 10 personnel all the time if they don't have four receivers who are really good. And why do they have those receivers? Because Brandon Bean went out and signed them. And in one case drafted Gabriel Davis. So I think you need, while, yeah, you want the general manager and head coach to be on the same path, you want them to be pushing in the same direction and not involved in any sort of power struggle or have any sort of trust issues, which I don't think is at play here. But I think you do want, you don't want your general manager to just be a yes man. And while that may be the perception because Sean McDermott came in first and people think he just brought along his buddy, that's not really the reality. Sean McDermott talked about it today that they weren't necessarily like they got along and they were cordial with one another, but in Carolina, but it was never a case of, man, if I get a job, you're going to be my GM or vice versa. It was, you know, they got along, they worked well, they had some conversations, and that was kind of the extent of it. And, you know, I think Brandon Bean is his own person and brings his own ideas to the table and is and has a really strong staff around him to be able to fight for some moves like that. And they're not always going to be right. He's not always going to pick the right player or trade for the right guy or sign the right guy. But I think there's a really healthy give and take that needs to exist. You can't have one guy with too much power because then there's nobody to tell you where your blind spot is. And we all have blind spots for different things. And we all, you know, need an extra set of eyes to see something that we don't see. Nobody sees everything 100% perfectly every time. So having those different ideas and those, you know, those discussions, those disagreements, I think is a really important part of team building that gets lost in all of the, they're tied at the hip. They're, you know, this and that. It's like, well, you don't want them to share a brain. You want them to, you know, you want two brains running the team. Mm-hmm. And I really do think they have that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can just tell, like, they are two guys that definitely have different priorities. I mean, Sean McDermott wants, I'm sure back when they first started the thing, Sean McDermott probably to win right then, win right away, and everything. And it probably killed him to go through 2018. But man, was it a necessary evil, because 2018 set the table for so many different things for this franchise. It set the table for them to basically reset the salary cap, which, you know, they didn't have to do it the way that they did, but they chose that course, and it helped enable them to have the type of spending spree that they did in 2019, where it essentially set up the core of their roster for the next two seasons. And on top of that, it allowed their young players to grow. It allowed them to find some young players that would factor into the future for them. It gave Josh Allen a low pressurized realm to get out a lot of the bad play that he had coming out of college, and to work through that stuff as opposed to needing to win straight away. I mean, they found guys like Levi Wallace, who has been a starter for them in a huge season this year. And he's been up and down, but still, they wouldn't have been able to find out about him without 2018. I mean, Matt Milano getting the type of run that he got in 2018 and was so valuable for him, and he's become an impact player. It even allowed guys to go through struggles like Deion Dawkins, who had a really bad 2018 and completely turned it around in 2019. So all of these different elements to that season, I'm sure it was just I'm sure it was so painful for McDermott, because he wants to win all the time. And Bean knew there was a greater purpose. And I'm sure Bean wants to win too, because he's super competitive. But he also knew that by taking those steps in 2018, it set them up for what they hoped to be, the extended future, as long as the quarterback hit. The quarterback is hitting. And 2018, and I will give Sean McDermott kudos, because I still believe winning six games with that roster was a minor miracle for him. But they're both seeing the fruits of going through that season and knowing that their likely difference of opinion with something as big as that has helped get them to where they are. So it is totally with you. It is so healthy for them to disagree both on smaller decisions and bigger decisions, because then that fosters growth and change and all of these different things that they value.
And it's part of why they are where they are, and why they'll probably be able to, you know, there's so many landmines when you're building an NFL team. There's so many landmines when you're trying to keep it together. So there will be more challenges ahead, and there's no guarantee that, you know, there's no guarantee they'll see the end of these contracts, right? The 2025 is a long way away in the NFL. Bills fans know that well. How many general managers, there was 5-year stretches where they'd go through three. So I think there's a lot that they have to navigate to keep the roster together, to get it to the next level. But I think it's really, you know, the give and take is necessary in those situations. As the conversations probably get even more difficult, as they have a lot of times this year, whether it's, you know, getting Ike Butker into the lineup or moving on from Quentin Spain or taking Trent Murphy out, all these things that, you know, personnel and coaching can be at odds on, there's been a good balance. And having them have the same contract through 2025 means that they're not looking at one or the other as a lame duck. You could not go into the final season of Brandon Bean's contract without signing him. You just couldn't do it, because that signals that he's, you know, I don't know, GMing for his job. You usually say coaching, but it's general managering for his job. And I don't think that's healthy. And I don't think the power vacuum is good for any organization. And there is no power vacuum that exists. It's pretty clear how everything's laid out. And with that not on their mind, they don't have to even think about it. It doesn't occupy any of their thoughts, you know, as they're spending their days figuring out how to make this thing last. So definitely a necessary move and the right combo that they have here.
Yeah, no doubt. And now Bills fans will have that through 2025. So get used to those two faces, because they are not going away anytime soon. And we'll see how they go through the next stage of this roster build, and see if they can continue having the success that they have, and if Josh Allen can continue to be what he is looking like he can be, which is potentially a top 5, top 10 quarterback in the NFL. And it's kind of remarkable to think that the Bills are where they are after they started this whole thing. But to their credit, they have pulled it off so far. Now it's about doing more than just winning the division or winning a playoff game or hosting a playoff game. And they know that. But yeah, they just have to be prepared to deal with each challenge every single year.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, Everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, let's get to the matchup, because as big of news as the Bills signing Brandon Bean to a contract extension that it is, this game is one of their biggest on the schedule and one of those litmus test type of games, because this is a Steelers team that is likely going to contend for a Super Bowl this season. And with how the Bills played against the 49ers in that total effort on all three phases, I mean, it makes you think that they can go toe-to-toe with teams like this one. And of course, the Steelers suffered their first loss, and they lost a little bit of their shine around the country. But make no mistake, this Steelers team is still incredibly good. They have suffered some injuries, but no one should be taking anything away from the Steelers for winning their first 11 games. I don't care who it was up against. I know it was a weaker strength of schedule than maybe some other teams out there, but this is still an outstanding defense. It's still a receiver core that they are basically living and dying through and picking up short yardage with their receiving core as opposed to the run game. And a quarterback that can still get the job done and move the ball down the field. So this is a huge spot for the Bills to figure out who they are, where they are in terms of 2020 and what they can do in the postseason this year.
Yeah, it's the toughest defense that they've played against. I don't really think it's close. You can look at pretty much any metric. We reference DVOA here as a pretty good barometer, just a good, you know, starting jumping off point. And Pittsburgh's got the number one defense in DVOA, the number one pass defense in DVOA, number three rush defense in DVOA. So they are very good. They're without Bud Dupree, potentially without Joe Hayden. His status is a little bit up in the air for this game. We'll see what happens there, but they have so much talent elsewhere. TJ Watt is going to be a similar problem to what Bosa was for them a few weeks ago against the Chargers. The whole front seven is really a bit of an issue for the Steelers, and Minkah Fitzpatrick as well. So I think it's a much tougher challenge than the 49ers defense for a few reasons. Number one, the 49ers, going back and looking at what they did, they sort of dropped a lot of guys in coverage and didn't really, they were a little bit passive in how they defended Josh Allen. And that just doesn't work. It didn't work certainly on Monday night. And I think it worked a little bit earlier in the season, but He had his best deep passing performance of the year, or since week two, I should say, against the 49ers. So there wasn't really it was a weird strategy, I guess, for the 49ers and not well executed. Still a good defense, but the offensive line did a good job keeping Josh Allen clean. The 49ers couldn't get much of a pass rush, and their zone coverage just got carved up. Difference with the Steelers that I see is that they pressure a lot more. They blitz a lot more. They're a lot better at that. But they don't need to send six, seven guys on a blitz. They can just send five and find a way to get home with the way they time it, the way they use their defensive backs as blitzers, the way they disguise coverages off of those blitzes. All of that becomes a problem huge test for Josh Allen, you know, to see if he can navigate through a game against that defense and not, you know, make a lot of mistakes is probably the number one thing that you want to see, is that he takes care of the football. He doesn't, you know, get into too many negative plays. There's huge potential for that against this defense because they get a lot of sacks and they get a lot of turnovers. It's kind of the calling card of that franchise, it feels like, is this defense. But especially this year, it's not drastically different than what Josh Allen saw last year. I think the big difference is that this Steelers team can play offense. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we talk about that a lot. Like, it's more of a psychological dynamic than anything else. But it's a lot different going up against this defense when Duck Hodges is the guy waiting to come onto the field than when it's Ben Roethlisberger. Because when it's Duck Hodges, it's a little bit easier to be patient, a little bit easier to not get frustrated, because you're like, hey, if I just play the long game and hit one touchdown drive, that might be enough against Duck Hodges. Against Ben Roethlisberger, you just know there's a little bit more urgency involved in that, and you know, a little bit more of a necessity to jump out to leads and find a way to get things going on that defense. So this is one of those defenses that you're not going to see really too many like this. I can't think. To me, they're the best defense in football. I don't think it's particularly close between them and the next best group. Maybe the Saints, you could say, is pretty close. Bills won't see them until the Super Bowl if both teams get there. There's not too many defenses standing in the Bills' way that are as good as – there's none that are as good as these Steelers.
Yeah, this will be the biggest test for Josh Allen this year. But a slight reason for optimism going against that Steelers defense is the fact that they will be without three of their top four inside linebackers. Devin Bush is injured. Robert Spillane suffered an injury last week, so he will be out. Vince Williams was put on the reserve COVID-19 list. So that leaves them with Avery Williamson, who they acquired before the trade deadline from the Jets, and Marcus Allen, according to their depth chart, who has the number of a defensive back. So he'll likely be playing out of position. So there's that. But if you want to look for a reason that would not breed as much optimism, is the fact that the Steelers could be getting back one of their top cornerbacks, Steven Nelson, in this game. And that's a big addition to what they're trying to do, especially against this Bills team who likes to throw it around the yard. But the one thing I do look to for this matchup in particular is how the Bills approached this Steelers defense last year, which I think is a good place to start. And mostly it was with how they approached the passing attack. Last season, Josh Allen set a season low in average time to decision against the Steelers. He got the ball out in under 2.5 seconds, which is basically unheard of for him. All year this season, he has the second highest time to throw average in the NFL at 3.02 seconds, according to Next Gen Stats. And that is only behind Baker Mayfield, who takes, I think, 3.11 seconds. So Allen has been taking his dear sweet time relative to the rest of the league. And with how much Pittsburgh blitzes, and like you pointed out, disguises their blitzes, all of these different things, and the personnel that they have up front, from Cam Hayward to Stephon Tuitt to the guy who is leading the NFL in every single pass rushing category there is, TJ Watt. I mean, this is a challenge for this offense in particular, because I don't think that they want to do away with their intermediate and deep passing, because it has been so good for them this season and it is their identity. So what gives here? Like, do you just favor the short area passing attack like you did last year and have low attempts, low yardage? Like, I think Allen was 15 of 25 for under 200 yards last year against the Steelers, because that's all they needed. Or do they try and push it? Do they put more pressure on their offensive line to block in front of Josh Allen, so that way he can let his wide receivers wiggle free down the field against this good defense? It's just going to be a fascinating decision by Dable and McDermott and how they want to approach this thing, because like you said, this defense is unlike anything that they have seen this year. It's unlike anything that they will see again this year, unless they see the Steelers in the playoffs. They are hashtag good, and we'll see how they approach this thing.
I think like the Colts and Ravens would be similar issues, but not in the same league as what they're going to see with the Steelers. And, you know, I think there's an opportunity maybe to run the football, you know, with these linebackers, you know, test those guys out, get it to the backs, find a way to, you know, see what you can do there, take advantage of the short passing game and Stephon Diggs. You know, they've done that quite a bit this year where they'll just throw him the ball and let him do something, you know, like throw him a quick screen pass just to get into a rhythm and get Josh Allen comfortable. And I think that having that in their arsenal is important. You know, the short, quick passing game helps them in matchups like this where you're trying to keep a blitzing team a little bit on their heels. And it's tough when there's defensive backs that can fly around, that can disguise what they're doing, that can tackle well the way, you know, a lot of these guys can. So that's going to be, you know, the biggest challenge. But you get the feeling that the Bills have an offense that can move the ball against just about anybody. You know, they can not maybe consistently over four quarters and not maybe, you know, where it always looks pretty, but they can get their points, you know, in certain, you know, batches. And I think they'll find some weaknesses here and do their best to exploit them.
And by the way, the Steelers are also getting back James Conner, who will probably do a lot more for their rushing attack than, say, Benny Snell or Anthony McFarland.
The Steelers also have 2 Watts.
They do have 2 Watts. They have Derek Watt, the fullback.
That's so a lot of Watts.
That's an electrician's dream. They also might be getting back their starting center, Marquise Pouncey, who would probably be the biggest addition of any of them, because their interior line play has not really been great, and it's probably part of the reason why they haven't been able to run the ball as well lately, because he's been replaced by J.C. Hasenauer. So I think for them, potentially getting Pouncey back would be just a huge thing, especially going up against a Bills run defense and a Bills group of defensive tackles who have been pushed around at times this season. So there's a lot there. All right, let's get to the prediction, because the this is a huge game. There's no way around it. This is a game that will probably, I don't want to say it'll define them by any means, but I think it's going to impact how we view this team. And there's a formula here to where they lose this game and you still wind up feeling better about the team and what they could do in the playoffs. But, you know, obviously, if they were to pull out a victory against an 11-1 Steelers team that was undefeated before Monday, that would be huge moving forward.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
So the line on this game is, and it has gone down, the Bills, the last time I checked, which I think was yesterday, the Bills were 2.5 point favorites. They are now 1.5 point favorites, and the total on the game is 48 points. So Matthew Fairburn, who wins, who covers the spread, and what do you have for the over-under?
Yeah, this is a weird game because the line has changed a lot the Bills opened, or the Steelers opened as a 1.5 point favorite over the Bills. And then it pretty quickly went to the Bills being a 2.5 point favorite over the Steelers. And now it's to a 1.5. If you got it at 2.5 or 3, I think it went all the way down to at some point. I think that's always good in a situation like this when two teams are pretty evenly matched and it's one of those games that is kind of a toss-up, you know, a little bit. I think, you know, getting the points is always what you want. I've gone back and forth on this one. I'm going to pick the Steelers because they're getting the points. I'm going to pick them to cover, and I'm going to pick them to win. They're getting a little bit healthier on offense. I think them losing against Washington is a weird psychological thing in their advantage. Maybe they got their wake-up call. Maybe they were looking ahead to this game. Who knows? I think, you know, they're not playing great. I wasn't blown away by them the last 2 weeks, but they also had a weird couple of weeks. And so, you know, we saw how that affected the Bills earlier in the season. Maybe this is their chance to sort of reset, you know, get back to doing what they do. I think it's going to be a really close game. I think the Bills, you know, for the first time in quite a long time, belong in a game like this, right? They, you know, you could see them winning a game like this. There's very much a sense that, to me, this is the game of the week, right? Like, this is this is the best game on the schedule, partly because the rest of the schedule stinks. But you've got Ravens Browns on Monday night, which is a good one. Last night was an intriguing matchup in theory that didn't turn out that way. I think the Colts and Raiders play this week, which is a pretty good one, but none of them are this one. You know, the Bills are in a heavyweight fight, so it should be an interesting one to watch. As far as the over-under, I'm going to go over. I think the Steelers can put up some points. And like I said, the Bills are a hard offense to slow down. It's a pretty low over-under, so even a game in the 20s should take care of that.
Yeah. You mean to tell me that Andy Dalton's return to Cincinnati doesn't do it for you?
A little, but not really. It's a pretty lousy week, which is even, it's kind of nice when I would say the best three games on the schedule, or three of the best four, were the primetime games. Thursday night, Sunday night, and Monday night. Doesn't always work out that way. And I think Bills fans will be watching that Monday night game between the Ravens and Browns pretty closely, considering, you know, that could be a playoff scouting situation for Bills fans. So, works out well for them too.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. I looked at this matchup, and like you pointed out, I think these teams are really evenly talented. I do think the returns of a lot of those players that I listed certainly help the Steelers here, that being Connor and Pouncey. Pouncey more than anything, and then Steven Nelson as well on the defensive side. Those three names, if they get all three of them back, that's just huge for them. Then you look at the matchup and where the Bills can win versus where the Steelers win. And I think the Steelers have advantages in a couple of areas that that probably flip this matchup into their favor, in my mind. One of which is an obvious one, that being TJ Watt, and he is just an absolute game wrecker this year. He is doing the Watt family name proud and picking up where maybe JJ Watt left off a year or two ago, and he has just been awesome this season. Unlike Watt, this guy, TJ can, or I'm saying unlike JJ, TJ can bend around the edge. He uses speed, uses power. Like, he just has everything in his arsenal coming from the left outside linebacker spot. And the Bills right tackle, Darrell Williams, while he's been really good for a lot of the games, his last two, since the bye especially, he has not looked great and has struggled with speed to the edge, struggled as a run blocker too. And I look at that matchup as one that could potentially define how this game goes. And then the other thing I'm looking at is how the Steelers win with their passing attack. And I think what will probably end up happening, if I had to guess, is the Bills stick Tre'Davious White on Chase Claypool, because Claypool versus Levi Wallace seems like a nightmare waiting to happen for the secondary. So that would probably leave Levi on Deontay Johnson. And so he would have to deal with those short area routes and seeding separation. And then Taron Johnson, who tends to hesitate in coverage against, you know, quicker footed slot receivers. And that's Juju Smith-Schuster. So I think those two receivers have an advantage over what the Bills are trying to do defensively. And we know that the Bills are going to have a tough time getting pressure on Roethlisberger because he gets the ball out in like 2.2 seconds. So there's a lot of things here. Offensively, I think the Bills can have some success. I don't see anybody in the league this year that can slow down Stephon Diggs. So I think there'll be some success there. It's really all about just protecting Josh Allen and seeing how they're going to approach this game and how quickly they want to get the ball out of his hands. I think this is also a sneaky spot for Dawson Knox to set a career high in both catches and yards because of the troubles the Steelers have with their inside linebackers right now and missing three of their top four. But ultimately, I think the Steelers have just one or two more advantages than the Bills do. So I'm going to go with the Steelers to win this game outright. I'm going to obviously take them to cover. And I'm going to take the under, actually, because I think both these defenses can slow down both of these offenses enough. I know. Boo the under. Boo the under.
The under was the right. The under is sometimes the right play. It was the right play weeks ago. So
48 is a weird number because these are two offenses that have scored a bunch this year. And 48 is almost like, hey, I bet you to bet the over sort of deal. So I'm going to take the under and go with a late, potentially last second field goal to win it for the Steelers, 23-21.
It does look like a potentially, the weather doesn't look too bad on Sunday night.
It's cleared up. There's no rain for Sunday night, and I don't really look at 13 miles an hour of wind to be all that terrible for these two offenses because, you know, you've got the low depth of target with the Steelers, and then you've got Allen's arm. So I think that kind of mitigates the wind factor, unless it was like 30 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's not a deal breaker for me, so I'm going to stick with the over. But the way I've always looked at those is like if you can envision one offense getting completely shut down, the under is usually a pretty decent bet because you need both teams to at least be moving the ball and scoring to hit some of these mm-hmm. numbers, that especially the ones that are getting thrown around this year, mm-hmm. you know, in over-under land. And it could happen this Sunday. Who knows? Or it could just be one of those grinded out games like last year because the Steelers haven't been a juggernaut on offense. But I don't know. It's going to be a fun game. It's a, like I said, a heavyweight fight that we have not seen the likes of in quite some time.
Absolutely. I also kind of wonder if the score of the game goes down because maybe the Steelers try to re-emphasize their run game if they get both Pouncey and Connor back this week. So we'll see. I mean, I'm sure they're probably looking at the Bills defense going, okay, they're weakest right up the middle, and maybe they're trying to exploit them there, but yeah, I cannot wait for this matchup. I mean, these are two teams that are so good and are playing at a really high level right now, even though the Steelers lost last week. I mean, this is going to be so much fun. And this is really going to be the last one of these big games. I mean, I guess you can count Miami in week 17 as well. But Miami just doesn't stack up to the caliber of team that the Steelers are and that the Bills are this year. So when you have a matchup like this on Sunday Night Football, sign me right the hell up. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's the only thing I'll say that is unfortunate is that we're not going to get the usual Sunday Night Football atmosphere. And
yeah,
you know, that's been kind of the bummer of the season, but the way this team is built, they should get more of those, you know, more of these types of games in the future. So it won't be fleeting. Hopefully, for the fans' sake, it won't be fleeting. So that when we've got full stadiums again someday in the future, they can enjoy games like this.
100%. All right, that's going to do it for us. The next time you'll hear from us will be after the game. You will likely not be awake when we are recording. We'll probably be recording sometime at 3 or 4 in the morning because, you know, night games do that to our line of profession. So you will hear from us as soon as you wake up and get ready for work on Monday. And we'll find out if this Bills team can put together their first marquee AFC win over the last two seasons. So it will most definitely be fun to see exactly how it all plays out. So for Matthew Fairburn, my name is Joe Biscaglia. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Buffalo Beat, and we will talk to you after the game on Sunday. See you then.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.